Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Pat the Talking Bearskin Rogue from Flame On, right here on the Nerdy Show Network. If you're looking for some sweet nerdy queer in your ear, then head over to nerdyshow.com/flameon and check us out. We cover everything from TV to movies, comics to drag queens, and so much more. For a gay and geeky slice of pop culture life, get ready to flame on.
The following program is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
And just a reminder, both Doug and I are going to be at AVL Scarefest near Asheville, North Carolina at the Montreat Convention Center this weekend, October 19th through the 21st. So if you're in the area, come see us. Tickets are really cheap. We look forward to hearing from everybody who wants to try the game.
All right, guys. Design episode 7, number 7.
Yay.
Lucky number seven.
We have a special guest with us today, Mr. Banks.
Doug's here.
Hello. Welcome back.
Hey, how was shooting Saving Mr. Banks? Was that hard?
I don't have a funny answer for that.
Did you like meeting Tom Hanks?
I liked the movie.
All right.
Did you see the new Mary Poppins trailer?
It looked okay. I liked the trailer for Captain Marvel better.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Neither do I.
It's anime.
Oh, okay.
So, well, we got only a couple things to go over, but we've got a lot of work to do with step two. Now, a lot of it's already been done, but only as a placeholder for things that we can change. Before we get to that, I kind of want to talk about the upper hand. The plus two bonus is fine, but it's also very bland, and I'm not even sure if it's necessary. Like, we want to have effects that proc off of the upper hand that maybe you don't even need the plus two bonus for. Because the chance to hit is so
wishy-washy, and it's going to matter less. Plus two is going to matter less and less.
Maybe the upper hand is enough. What that means, though, is if we want it to matter that you have the upper hand, there need to be more things to take advantage of it than backstab.
Definitely, because the only argument against that right now is there's only a handful of things that do anything with the upper hand.
Yeah.
Or there's like one, really.
Or what the upper hand grants you is different from advantage or combat advantage, where instead of it, you roll twice and use a higher, or you...
Do you get a plus whatever your level is?
Well, we don't have levels. That's the thing.
No, it's true. I guess it's however steps you have down a certain path of whatever.
Maybe.
That's a level of complexity that I don't think... I think the level of complexity that it increases, it doesn't give you enough depth.
Well, whatever your main is. Like if you're taking the path of the champion and you're like 3 steps down it, what if you just got plus 3?
How about this instead? You gain steps down paths, give you... On the upper hand, damage or plus to hit. Damage focus ones give you plus one damage. More passive ones give you plus one to hit.
That's not bad.
And that way you'd be like, oh, I'm Citadel, so I have a plus. I'm 3 steps down Citadel. I have plus 3 to hit when I have the upper hand, but I'm 2 steps champion, so I also do 2 more damage.
I like that within a path. Maybe the upper hand should confer something that's simple. So the way advantage works in 5e is so simple. However, because that game involves a lot less, the margins are a lot tighter on our game than on 5th edition. 5th edition, the math is much looser.
Yeah.
If we used advantage where you just roll twice and use a higher result, it would be game-breaking in many cases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a huge advantage.
A dual-wielding champion rogue? Yeah, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Because then... He would crit even more.
Think about what flanking gives you, right?
Yes.
It just makes the enemy harder to watch what you're doing. It's harder to defend two spots at once because they're on the complete opposite. Is there a gameplay mechanic that we could translate to that? Like,
I think maybe the greatest advantage of it would be you could pick your spot more, maybe dig through a layer of armor.
What about the classic where the guy in behind bends down The guy in front pushes him.
I love that.
That would be a cool caltrip.
Well, I mean, yeah, like, but if it just like a simple rule that applies instantly, no matter what your class is, like, is their AC halved? If their attention is, I'm just throwing an idea. Because if you're saying if their attention is split between like, oh, I got people on both sides of me, at a certain point, you're either going to just face one and be willing to take a backstab, or you are so split between the two of them, you can't brace yourself for any incoming attack. So you're way more vulnerable.
Yeah. Well, okay. So I think I'm just throwing this out there because I think it's, even thinking about it makes me think it's too overpowered. In reality, what that would mean is you couldn't disengage. And if you try to attack somebody, either person, the other one gets to make an attack of opportunity against you.
Oh, shit.
Now, that may be game breaking. However, that's what it would feel like, right? Like, have to ignore one threat to get another one.
Kind of like a challenge to where like you had to pick one to focus on. Like, If you were surrounded by people, you had to like, well, I'm going to focus on this guy, and you would take a negative to attacking anyone else. So it's kind of like a challenge.
Well, what if it's just that whichever one you attack, the other person gets an attack opportunity, and we take away the problem with disengaging?
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to try that?
Yeah, let's try that.
Because that's better than a +2, and it's more, it will scale infinitely. Yeah.
The only thing is, like, if you're an enemy perspective, like, that makes sense. Like, me and a buddy surround an enemy, the enemy's going to focus on one of us.
Right.
That makes it really clean and simple. But if you're, like, a player, and you're tanking, and you go in, and you're, like, surrounded, how would that work?
If you still have the option to disengage, which makes more sense than just not being able to, you could disengage one step. And if they've got you completely surrounded where you can't disengage, buddy,
you're already fucked anyway. Yeah, like, you're dead.
And if you're like a powerful sorcerer or some shit and you're like trying to make an area of effect, like, I'm just going to wade in there and the floor is lava, whatever power that you're doing. Is there any logic to that? I have a character where I want to get in close and I just happen to get surrounded. Maybe my power is that I'm not completely helpless. I'm like level 10, whatever. And I'm doing some magic thing that's completely all around
me. Well, I mean, if you could teleport, if you could, you know what I mean?
If you teleport.
But if you jump in and get completely surrounded, man, that's a risk.
Dude, well, yeah.
Even as this scales forward, unless we drastically change survivability, if you take 5 hits in a round, even with armor, you are fucked.
In general, if it's like a 4-way stop.
But if you could,
who you go clockwise, you know, like
if you could get surrounded, teleport out, and leave an AOE.
I just figured it out. Yeah. If you're surrounded, and I say I'm going to focus on the guy here, and he's in front of me, then it's the person right behind you.
That's what we're saying.
It doesn't matter.
Well, because it makes sense too, because that's what's happening when you try to cast a targeted range attack in somebody's face. They're hitting you because you're not actively dealing with them.
In my head, I didn't want it to become like every bad 80s kung fu movie where the ninjas come in and they attack the hero one at a time.
If it's a 4-way stop, which we can't have because it's a fucking hex grid.
I know, but yeah, just
it's a hex grid.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, you can't have 4 people and there are 2 pair flanking you.
Sure.
Right? So it would only apply to the person that has the upper hand versus versus that specific attack.
Yeah.
So if you attack somebody, the other person that's granting them the upper hand gets it against you. Well, actually, maybe not, because now what about if you're knocked down? I imagine if you're knocked down, you grant the upper hand.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Mm-hmm. So
let's say you're knocked down and you have a person in between you and you have another person.
Right.
Or are we talking about if you're knocked down in the middle?
Let's say you're knocked down, there are 3 people.
Uh-huh.
And you attack one of them, which one of the other 2 get to hit you?
I'm saying both in that scenario.
Yeah. So maybe that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. You got to find a way to disengage. For getting knocked down?
You have the upper hand. I mean, sorry, they have the upper hand against you if you're knocked down.
Right.
You gotta move. You gotta get out of there because that is a punishing place to be.
They're gonna curb stomp you.
But in real life, it is.
Yeah.
That's
done. The fight is over.
Yeah. If you get the upper hand by flanking, the person not flanking you gets to make the attack. If it's because you're whoever
has the upper hand.
Yeah. Anybody who has the upper hand against you gets to make an attack if you don't hit them.
Yes.
I don't think we have any blast attacks that are from your square.
No.
Do like a self-preservation magic where if you do fall prone or if you do fall down, you send fire out or some shit, you know? Like,
that'd be fun. We could do that later.
I could see there being a centered on you fire
just
blast.
A radiated
thing.
Blast.
You guys, like a, you know what a bouncing Betty is?
Yeah.
The mine that jumps like 4 feet in the air?
Yeah.
What if that, so like you're on the ground, so it shoots up like 3 feet in the air over your head and just goes.
Well, I was thinking you were the mine, so you'd like fart out of your ass and
propel
yourself in the air.
That would work for the gelt, I think.
And then all 4 arms.
Spinning attack.
All 4 limbs just shoot flames.
Well, you would need to.
Yeah, well, and we can also say that.
Gelt already have an answer for this.
Well, the fart would need rotation.
Well, and if
how would that work?
If we get a class who does do a melee sweep attack and it goes everywhere. Because you're including the attack, you don't take an attack of opportunity.
Yeah.
Because you're dervishing,
yeah,
essentially.
If anybody's not included in your attack action, they get to make an attack against you if they have the upper hand.
If they have the upper hand, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like this idea. I like it a lot. I didn't think we'd come up with something that simple.
Man.
Simple's best.
That makes being surrounded so terrifying.
But
too.
It should
that's
be.
So,
shouldn't
yeah.
it?
And it should
no,
be.
No, 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 no. I'm saying that's the way the game is playing right now is a little more inherently conservative than D&D or Pathfinder, but I kind of like that because the stakes don't have to be tacked on outside of the game mechanics.
Right.
Yeah, in the last two sessions, Keith has played very conservatively.
Yes.
And we're like, why don't you just go in there and hit him? And he's like, that doesn't work for me. First two combats, I fell down twice.
Yeah.
He's been proven right. He has been incredibly effective the last two combats because he has been more conservative. He's done way more damage.
Because, dare I say, we're trying to make a quote-unquote more realistic
I wouldn't thing. I wouldn't go that far.
No.
I would say we'd make it more elegant.
Comparatively speaking, more realistic.
Maybe. Well, here's the problem, too, is that we are not making a simulationist game, which is what they tried with Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 edition. And even Paizo with Pathfinder goes a little bit that direction, where that's why you have so many fucking skills.
There's a lot of granularity there, yeah. I think what we're going for is a more story telling,
but the tone is it, you know.
Well, I think the tone is not realism. The tone is more Game of Thrones than Lord of the Rings. Characters yeah. can and will die.
It's mm-hmm. a grimdark
making
feature.
Mistakes are punished.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Have any of us ever played GURPS?
Yeah.
Yeah, way back in the day.
What is your guys' opinion of it?
Complicated.
The amount of rules that are specific to everything you're trying to do, saying that GURPS is one thing is not correct.
Is that the game with the Play-Doh grape and you got to smash it?
No, yes. they're all D6s.
It's a very good RPG.
The superhero one I played was great. The cyberpunk one I played was awful.
But is that, do you chalk that up to the mechanics or to the DM?
Here's the problem, man.
I would say, like, I didn't enjoy the cyberpunk mechanics because there were things that were over-designed that looked important on paper that as soon as you sat down, you realized it didn't really play out the way it even played out in your head. There was a disconnect between what was in the book and how it actually played out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I like that answer. We all agreed?
Yeah.
Okay. Then next week, we're trying that out.
That's going to be scary.
It's going to be scary, but I think it also, the way you guys play, it's going to play to your benefit. Provided there's any combat next week. We don't know. And I think the interesting thing will be the immediate question. When you go back to 3.5, they had, I think it's called Gang Up. When you have a large creature, so instead of getting just a +2 from flanking, you get like a +4. Everybody does.
Yeah.
Because you really surround them. This solves that problem. It scales no matter how many people you have. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it scales with every extra person that has the upper hand.
Their health is going to have to be significantly higher.
Well, yeah. Or their armor.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we have that option now.
Yeah.
So, and I've been very satisfied with the way armor has played out. I don't feel like it's too overpowered or underpowered. I feel like it plays exactly like I'm expecting it to play as the GM. When I attack Max's character, I feel like it does the damage it's supposed to do against him, and I know what those mm-hmm. enemies are getting into by attacking you. Speaking of scaling, one thing I was thinking of, and one of the biggest problems, but we're very similar to 4th edition in the sense that we have per scene, so encounter abilities, daily mm-hmm. abilities at wills, right? One of the biggest problems with 4th edition is power creep, right? One of the inherent problems of having per encounter abilities, or per scene abilities in our case, is that the more of them you have, the less you have to use at wills. Because you can just line the bed. If somebody only goes step one down anything, they've got like 15 at wills. You know, mm-hmm. they've got 15 encounter powers or per scene powers, and they never have to do anything else, and they're extremely powerful. What if, to mitigate that, so you could balance later encounters,
mm-hmm.
we limit the number of per scene abilities you can use in a scene, and maybe you can only use one daily per day, but you get to pick it on the fly. You've got dailies, you've got a bunch of them, and you're like, this is the most appropriate, but it's a daily. If I use my daily ability
all,
is spent.
All other dailies are,
yeah, are locked enough, out for the day. Yeah.
And per scene, we'll just lock it. This is the scene. You get to use one per scene action.
Well, I think maybe two.
Two per scene?
Maybe two per scene actions.
I was going to say, like, we don't have a lot of rounds of combat, so that works out. The thing about limiting dailies to one a day is, how many of those reasonably are you going to get? So step three is when we're going to start introducing dailies, or two?
We're going to talk about that today.
All right.
And they're extremely powerful. And the idea that you would be too worn out to do something with that power again in the same day.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It should. It should make sense. However, we have utility abilities that are daily and per scene. Do we limit those to the same thing, or is it only attacks?
The advantage of the enemies is the enemies don't only have to exist for a scene.
Can you elaborate? I'm sorry.
If you have a daily utility power, I do want to separate those from attacks.
Well, what if we beefed up the utility powers? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it's not an attack, but it's a daily, and you got to choose between that and attack. But man, it might save somebody from dying right now.
We'll see how it plays out.
Well, how about we just talk about attacks then?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's easier to conceptualize than the myriad abilities you're going
to
get.
Just feels like utility powers, that's going to come down a lot to the player's ability to think spherically. The reward of utility abilities sits heavier on the player's side. And you want to reward good behavior and good players and try not to make things that innately hamstring people who are a little duller.
If you are a player who doesn't like to get deep into the mechanics,
mm-hmm.
you just go, I'm going everything champion. Just right down the line champion. You're going to have, by step 10, you're going to have like 4 per scene attacks and 3 dailies or, you know, whatever the numbers are. I think if you just have them and you're like, all right, well, you know what? I'm just going to use this one. And it locks out the others. You're like, fine. I mean, this is most appropriate right now. I don't think it's that complicated because it's a lot simpler than prepared spells, right?
Well, it's almost in the name. If this is a per scene, this is your one for the scene. That's it. Once per scene, you can do any of these. Once per day, you can do any of these.
I feel like 2 per scene abilities might be good, but maybe 1 if they're tough enough. Well, but here's the problem. We've got racial. So when you start, you get a racial per scene attack, period. Mm-hmm. You get it. At step 1, you get a per scene ability. So you've got 2 to start. You should be able to use both. In one scene.
Yeah. Also, it's fun to chain some of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is maybe also why I would like the utilities to be there. Having fun chain abilities internal in your character is really cool and really fun. And that feels like part of the character.
Well, let's leave the utilities off. We'll say there's no limit other than what it describes. But the attacks are limited.
Yeah.
So if it's a per scene attack action, you get 2 of them per scene. If it's a daily action, you get 1 per day.
They're also functionally going to be utilities that are used outside of combat.
Sure. Yeah. When we get to step 3, we've talked about this a little bit, that there will be some utility actions you can do outside of combat that you can also use within combat for character flavor stuff. We're on board for 2 per scene, 1 per day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they'll be interesting for people who are playing Tolden, who automatically get 3 per scene abilities to start with. They have 3 to pick from. It's like a deck of cards. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You can only play 2 and you've got 3. You have more options than everybody else. I feel like that's how it should feel.
Yeah.
But you're not going to have the one player who's just a total badass nonstop, always doing your per scene one after another.
Right.
It's like you're kind of, it's like an equalizer.
Really, I feel like us as designers, it's going to help us with scaling up difficulty of encounters. It's a lot easier to increase them linearly if you know that somebody doesn't have every turn he's going to use a per scene ability that does triple weapon damage. You know what I mean? And then some guy has 1 per scene ability, but he's got 3 dailies, you know?
As fun as it was in that one D&D campaign where I was the wizard and I was just stringing those magic missiles one after another with all these, finding
the daily and utility abilities.
Mixing it all. And it's like, all right, here's 5 magic missiles for you.
It's really hard to manage. It really is.
As we go through the playthrough, we might want to do things where like, oh, you only get 2 per scene attack abilities, except for your racial, which you always have access to, because it doesn't scale as well with every other one, and it might get buried, so we might throw that in. I haven't ever used my racial. It would literally not affect me at all.
If someone gets up close enough.
You've done a good job of making sure it doesn't happen. You could easily think of a way it could.
Oh, yeah. But it's also weirder because it's one of its best utilities is that it's a reaction.
That's a good moment if you have to choose, like, okay, I got hit. I only get 2 per scene abilities. Do I want this to be the one? Do I want this to be the one? Then it becomes closer to the card game mechanic where you're like, no, I'm going to hold it back.
Yeah.
I'm going to save it because I got this other thing I want to use. I was on the Game Design with Richard Pullman podcast, and we were talking about bad GMs and how do you regulate that? And like, how do you keep it from being a GM who's just monologuing you his story and there's no collaboration really within it? Like, you have to fit within it, and if you go the wrong direction, you are harshly punished. How do you prevent that? How do you incentivize the GM to just be better? You know, how do you do it?
You got to toughen up, and you got to talk. After the game, before the game, you got to talk. I don't think there's a way you can play the game to make the GM better.
Well, here's the problem is that some GMs don't feel like they are a player. They're the person overseeing it, and they built the world. But
Josh, is there something you want to tell us?
Well, no, I'm playing the game with you guys, and I'm rolling in front of you always because I want to be like, here's a choice I made. I even tell you the hit bonus, what it's going to be, because I want you to see what's going on. And I did that before we were designing an RPG because I enjoy that aspect of like, we're all playing a game. However,
well, and you also played with a group where you never felt like you needed to cheat. And when you were going to cheat, you were like, this happens. We're not even going to, like, you were just like, we're not going to roll for this. This happens.
I like the idea that, like, hey, this thing screwed up and it's a game mechanic that screwed up. Or it's just, this is going to ruin our fun.
Yeah.
Like, we all just kind of talk about it, and then we just decide to go a different direction. It's not like some secret thing.
I don't know what power you have as a player to make a GM better.
That's what I want to bring up, and I don't need an answer for this, but I do kind of want to raise the question in case anybody gets some good ideas later. Is there a way the players could reward the GM? Because I'm handing out momentum to you guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I'm trying to imagine other people in my seat. Maybe this is their first RPG.
Uh-huh.
It would feel really good if you're a new GM for players to be like, you get...
This is awesome.
Everybody's like, hey, everybody, that was great, right? Everybody agree? You get plus momentum. But, I mean, momentum as a mechanic for GMs, what would that mean? I don't know.
I haven't played it, but I know that Edge of the Empire has mechanics similar to that, where you spend light side or dark side points. It's not like momentum at all. But the idea that if you do something that's like dark side related or you spend that point, you're basically giving that point to the GM to use later, knowing that it may come back to bite your ass. That's a very specific thing. It's not to reward the GM. It's more of like, I'm going to do something.
You're trading it.
Yes, you're
like
trading
the way that we're trading
it's
momentum.
Like, yeah, like you're making a deal with the devil where you're like, I'm going to get to do this now and I'm going to do some weird cool Sith shit. But that means the GM later is going to take something of equal strength to maybe come at me later.
Well, the problem, too, though, is that how do you keep it from being like, oh, well, you know what? We like you, and you didn't kill us, so here's,
here's
some momentum. Yeah. Here's some bribery.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know if there's, I don't know if there is a reasonable answer for this in this kind of game, but the idea is really intriguing.
We already do something different than other tabletop games in the way we play. The GM lays out the roles in front of us. So if you want to cheat, you have to spend momentum that is rewarded by your players. We're like, I really want this to happen, but you need enough good karma banked. I don't really want this to happen. I don't want you to like one hit KO this guy. I'm going to pull out some momentum. This guy is more important to the story than you thought.
Well, I don't.
But then players are going to start withholding momentum from giving it to the GM.
Because it introduces risk to them.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, it doesn't introduce risk to me to give you guys momentum. I mean, you could do it to make something go off, but I want that to happen. Like, I want you guys to succeed, even if I'm playing against you. Like, my goal is not to kill you guys. My goal isn't not to kill you guys. That's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to facilitate the game.
I think it's an interesting concept to think. Is there something, if the GM does something that blows everyone's minds, the players can say, oh, here's momentum for that. Like, what's the equivalent of that?
Yeah.
But you bring up the point of like, well, how does it not just become brown nosing?
It has to introduce some kind of risk.
Yeah.
Well, then
there's always going to be the one player who's like, oh, that was so genius. Let's give it up. You know, like
every player at the table has to agree to do it.
That's never going to happen. It's never going
to
happen.
That's fine. But it's got to be unanimous.
It'll never happen.
And you're already...
Two-thirds majority.
No. I think it will. Like, I understand what Liam's saying here.
And you're already presenting a back and forth. It is risky to give the GM momentum to do things, but you also do want to be on good terms with your GM.
The GM just make a momentum out of thin air for the NPCs that they're rolling for?
Can't.
How do you
magically
know?
Make it?
So wait, so
because I'm rolling in front of you.
Yeah,
you
but
know
if
I'm going to roll
but
an extra
D6. If you're like, I really want this one bad guy to get away. Like the whole point is that they're going to fight.
All right.
And they're going to get away.
I have an idea, and maybe this is dumb. It's dumb, but it might be fun. What if, let's say it takes 100, okay, 100 points, arbitrary number.
Or whatever. All right.
Yeah, let's say 100 points. If the DM gets 100 of them, he can resurrect anything you've killed for later use.
I like that idea too.
But then every time I reward a GM for stuff, I don't. Well, there's one more. I'm going to keep track and make sure. Gosh, don't give him any more. And it's like as soon as it's a game.
I feel like that's easy to track, though. I mean, you're tracking your experience. This may be more appropriate in a different game.
Like,
but I feel like the idea warrants discussion.
House rules, free parking, Monopoly. House rules, free parking. You put all the taxes, all that stuff. What if that momentum you're giving the GM or whatever?
Yeah.
And it gets to a certain point. And then they can roll to add that to another player momentum. So, like, you've been giving the GM, and all of a sudden something that you would have gotten 3 momentum for, now you're getting 15 momentum because the GM is like, that was fucking cool, and it's added to their
GM can do that anyway. If it's that funny, impressive.
But this is,
thing. Automatic thing that happens that you can control.
Like a tipping point. So the more momentum you're giving to your GM, like the more they're doing it, the better they can make something.
Like that quarter game at the arcade
where all the coins are laid out.
Like, if I just keep putting more in here, it's going to spill out all of them.
Let's say we have a spinner. It gets to a point and you spin it and like, player four, you get
And then he does something crazy and he's like, all right, well, I needed to spend 9 momentum to do that. There are 3 players. You each get 3. Because you just did something crazy. You just overcame a situation in which God came down and changed the universe.
So it gets to a point where like, now they can just push all that momentum out back onto you. So you're paying into something that can come back into you, and it makes it more fun for the GM.
which he can use to create interesting fights that you have to get through. But then you're rewarded because it was an interesting fight.
I may not be hearing you right, but this is what I'm hearing. You're talking about, like, GM, that was a great job. Let's all reward you however many points. The GM can then say, oh, I'm going to take those points and I'm going to make a new encounter that I otherwise wouldn't have done. That's like a bonus round. Okay, let's say I have the person who's going to be the big bad.
Yeah.
And the big bad is part, like, he's just a regular soldier of this army. Yeah. And then you guys are cutting through the army. Uh-huh. I want that one character to get away because he's the prince who's inheriting whatever, but you don't know that.
Well, let's say they kill him.
Yeah.
And then you're like, I got a good idea. And I've earned enough points to be like, he didn't die.
But couldn't you just do that without them knowing anyway?
You absolutely can.
You can. I'm just trying to say, we're developing a system to reward the GM and to involve the GM.
We make it a Padme situation.
I don't, but it also feels... okay, cool, but I don't think that's forcing the GM to be a better GM.
No, I agree with you. However, the idea of it, I think, is attractive to GMs who are like, okay, well, I mean...
If you're open to that, you're probably already a good GM.
No, probably.
But this is the carrot. We're just adding a carrot.
But it layers in a system where if you're learning to be a GM in this system, put good habits in the beginning.
I mean, I think we got... We kind of have the idea of the question in place.
Right.
Let's move on.
There's no easy answer to this.
No. Well, there might be, but we may not think of it tonight. And it's frankly not that important right now. We have a system that works. I trust everybody here to GM, you know.
God, I want a GM so bad.
Okay, well, you'll be next then.
I'm not playing an anime game.
I want you to GM.
I think you
need to GM an anime game.
I'm not playing.
You've been secretly playing Berserk.
You know
for
what?
The last...
Just play an anime game, but don't tell him it's an anime game. He won't know.
I'll take a hiatus. 6 months hiatus from Homebrew Hombres.
The other question was, like, can players have too much freedom in their choices of what they're going to do in the story? I think
if you're a bad GM,
I think. The answer is kind of yes, but I feel like everybody... I feel like that's the session zero problem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, if you don't have session zero, you're going to have everybody who wants to go in different directions. Uh-huh. You know, you haven't agreed on the kind of game you want to play. And
What if you start off, like, doing a sandbox where you just say, you know what, you guys tell me where you want to go, and I'm going to generate it up real quick before you go out there.
Well, I feel like if everybody agrees, like, I want to do this, they're going to work it out, they'll figure it out, and then the GM will do it. But the GM's nervous about improving that kind of thing. It's understandable, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, if you don't know the system that well... It's going to make you nervous. Mm-hmm. So I don't think players can have too much freedom. Like, I love the moments in combat where somebody's like, okay, not one of my abilities. However, could it be possible that we try to figure out a way to do this thing? I'm like, that sounds awesome. Let's go for it, you know?
Can I light the catapult on fire?
Yeah.
Can I roll to destroy the Sword of Legend?
Too much freedom, I think. I don't believe so because...
What? Define too much freedom.
Well, you're constrained by your players. Like, you want to continue having a good game. Like, in all reality, Kelton should quit the archaeology project. Like, after all this shit, it's not archaeology anymore. He should leave. But
you
he's
call
not
this
going...
archaeology?
Exactly. Like, but... Constrained by the group, that's not fun. I'm not going
to,
you know.
Yeah. Well, it's more fun to the guy being like, why are we even doing this? It is fun to play
exactly,
that character.
Yeah.
But really, but what? How would anyone, how do you define too much freedom? What would be something a player wants to go, no, that's too much freedom, where you're like, I don't have this ability, but I want to do it anyway?
Okay, forget about players. Can GMs have too much freedom? I think yes.
Well, yeah.
I think that yes is the absolute answer.
I think most people quit role-playing games because of GMs like that.
Narcissistic ones who make the game about them or their pet character.
But they make a character that the whole game revolves around and he can't die.
But that's too much freedom. That's them ignoring the rules.
I think it's too much freedom.
Inherent in the rules is I can do what I want.
Right.
Fuck
but
you.
That's like a homebrew rule that they make up at the table. Like if you say in the rules, you don't say PS, GM, you can do literally whatever you want. Feel free to ignore all these rules.
They do say that.
Yeah. They do, but that's like only if it means like makes it a better game.
I think Heinlein would say you have freedom, but you have more responsibility to the group.
You are in charge of your friends having a good time.
Or a bad time.
You're the computer in the computer game.
That is another incentive for finding a way to reward a GM.
Yes.
Just because it tells that GM how they're doing. Other than like the effect it has on the game.
Well, like, we'll give them citizenship. I'm reading Starship Troopers for the 10th time.
Okay.
I love it.
The only way to combat too much freedom, other than an incentive, a separate incentive for the GM, is rules that are clear that aren't contradictory, which is going to be extremely difficult. That's an easy thing to say.
Every power is an exception to a rule.
There's a story. I used to work at GameStop, and this guy got out of a Magic tournament, and he's like, my brother is the biggest asshole in Magic, because on the card it says, you lose next turn when you play this. And he's like, all right, it's next turn. You lose.
But that's definitively not what it means.
Right, but you know, it does say that, and it can be interpreted very plainly is that.
But wrong.
You lose next turn. Which is, I mean, everybody knows that's not what it
that's
means.
That's why judges exist, because they come over and they'd be like,
no, yeah.
If you try to pull that stuff in GPs and stuff, you can be disqualified.
But who can overrule the GM other than just walking out? See what I mean?
I think that should be a preface in the thing, but like, listen, this is how most groups break up.
The number one rule should be your player should be having more fun than your self-satisfaction of pulling off a story.
Yeah, maybe. Like, maybe like, this is your game together. Well, this is your story together. This is not you as the GM writing a story.
Like, you are sacrificing your time to make sure they have a good time.
Yeah, but they need to enter the social. Like, maybe we should just have a section about the social contract of playing a game like this.
Yeah, but
like,
you're building the skeleton, but they're adding everything else. Like, you're not responsible for everything. Let them run, and you're going to discover things that
you're responsible for making sure they have fun with the choices that they make.
But you're also having fun. Like,
yeah, if you're doing
if you let them run wild, it's going to be a much better game than you ever thought it could be, and a different one.
Unless the players are total shit and they're just being murder hobos and they don't, you know what I'm saying?
Like, well, even
you can have fun with murder hobos.
Murder hobos
you
can
could,
be fun.
But like if you have a team of me monsters, you know,
you could just outline the social contract. It's like, as a GM, here's what you don't do.
Everyone sign this before we play.
No. Just in general. Whereas it's like, and as a player, here's some rules because your GM is taking a lot of time out to do this for you. Stay off your fucking cell phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, don't stack
dice. Again, this is something that you should go over in session zero.
Yeah, but I think you should, if you're like, here's your responsibility as a player.
Yeah.
Because this person put a lot of shit in there. And there's other people around the table. You need to pay attention when combat's happening.
Combat order is not break time.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also a situation where if we're looking at, you know, murder hobos versus narcissistic GMs, the system already makes murder hobos hard to do.
Yeah.
Sure.
With the way that slots work, with the way that momentum works, and how it feels.
Doesn't momentum help against a narcissistic GM?
Yeah, immediately, because the more important you are to the story that is represented by momentum, literally the harder it is for you to die.
And if you have a narcissistic GM who's just like not giving out momentum, and you're spending momentum, and you're doing amazing badass shit, and like, all right, fine, you kill whatever.
Yeah.
You can't control for bad friends.
Yeah, you can.
I'm saying.
But you have the added bonus of you have a metric for how shitty he is. If he's being stingy with momentum and you know it, because you have it in the rule book.
And you just
like,
pulled off.
It'll be in the rule
thing.
Book where like this is how it works. Then you can know quantitatively how stingy he's being, and you can be like, fuck you, I know you're wrong.
If you ever do anything that gets high fives from around the table and your GM is frowning,
you're
not having a good time.
Fucked up.
Doing this wrong.
Yeah.
Alright, let's put that to bed for the moment. Because I feel like the answer for that is that's an ongoing philosophical gaming conversation.
Yeah.
Because it is the internet, we should probably come up with another term than murder hobo.
Why?
That is the term the internet uses.
That's the term the internet understands.
The internet is where I heard that term.
About
granted, I heard a lot of other stuff on the internet that I'm not going to repeat on this podcast.
Kleptomaniacal indigent.
It rolls right off the tongue. It's so poetic.
So, okay, let's get into step two.
Yes.
Step two is where our characters get dailies. Serious daily attacks.
Dope.
As well as I think features for most people. Let's just go down the line. You guys want to do this?
I do want to do a quick timeout and just have a very general question about step two. Dailies, what is their purpose? Like, what is the mission statement of step two?
I think the step two is like, you're good enough at this that you get a special, nearly game-saving move that takes a lot out of you.
Should it make up for deficiencies? Should it add a new layer of depth to a thing? Or should it be the things you already do, but harder?
I don't think there's a blanket answer for that. There's a few paths that are not very deficient in things.
Yeah,
you know,
very generalized.
But you don't want to have a character wake up one day and say, you know what? I'm going to try something that I've never done before. And
because my example is the character that I'm playing, great damage dealer, does area effect damage. When we go step two, does he get another cool area effect damage, or does he get an actual specific one shot?
So right now, for instance, the first one we're going to do is champion. He has an ability that does triple weapon damage, which is similar to his step one per scene attack, but it puts him in a stance that he can end whenever he wants to, that until the stance ends, whenever an enemy makes an attack of opportunity against you, your next attack gains a extra weapon damage, and then that stacks until you use it. So maybe fire gets something where it augments you until the end of the scene. I don't know if that's appropriate, because this one requires you to make a sacrifice every time, but it's like you're reckless. Like the idea is that you've changed. You're like, oh, I'm going for it, dudes, you know, and you're going to invoke attacks of opportunity just to get extra damage to use against people.
Well, I'm trying to think of dailies that I had in D&D before, and they were all very different.
Yeah.
One was like a sharpshooting one. The other one, when I played the monk, it was just like a stance that I took and just dealt more damage like around me. I don't know. They felt very different.
I feel like let's just take them
one at a time,
case by case.
All right.
All right.
So we're looking at champion first?
All right. Yeah. Right now it does triple weapon damage plus strength. Mm-hmm. I almost want to reduce that to 2 weapon damage because of the ongoing effect.
What about 4 weapon damage plus strength?
That could work too.
Speaking not as a champion.
And then they get a feature on step 2 called Manhunter, and you gain the upper hand against targets that are slowed or immobilized.
Okay, that works for me.
I feel like very general, but useful. That you have that period, the end, until... Yeah,
if you're picking that path, that seems in step with
sense,
the type
right?
of... I want to play that type of character. That's why I chose that path. You know?
As we go on, we're going to do a daily and a feature?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Now that we've changed the upper hand, that sounds way cooler.
Yes. So the champion one is 2 weapon damage and... You can stack opportunity attacks into a weapon damage for a final blow.
Yes.
All right.
Opportunity attacks that are done against you.
Yes.
Even if they don't hit.
Dope.
Every time you provoke.
Yeah.
It does it. So
that can lead to a very cinematic moment.
Kind of reminds me of Casey Jones from the Ninja Turtles movie because he's just like bouncing around. Hit me, come on. And then he does his.
Can you use this with an at will?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can use it with everything.
All right.
Yeah.
Including things from other paths. As long as it involves a weapon. And then they get a per scene utility action, which we might want to move to step 3, called Iron Jaw. And it's immediate reaction, and you gain shielding, which is temporary hit points. It's like mm-hmm. Power Word Shield in World of Warcraft, equal to your strength plus your endurance plus 1d6. And the damage that triggered the ability is not mitigated by it.
Okay.
I feel like that's good. I kind of want to move that to step 3, though. I think
that
one daily,
good.
One feature...
Yeah,
cool
yeah
that's a
sense.
Big move already, yeah. Yeah.
If we move it to step 3, we can increase the amount that it shields you for.
Yeah.
Okay. Step 2 of Citadel, Juggernaut Stance, which is another stance, and it says, you decide that enough is enough, and woe to anyone who stands in your way. I should say woe betide those who stand in your way, because it sounds cooler. Until the stance ends, whenever you use Unstoppable Force, which we removed, you may choose to either knock a target down instead of pushing it, and if you choose to push the target and it cannot be moved, it is immobilized until the end of next turn and takes additional damage equal to your strength. That's fine. Mm-hmm. It does not feel equivalent to what Champion is doing.
It does not.
What's a good daily ability for Citadel? What's a defensive thing that you'd be like, once per day I can do this to defend my friends? I mean, you could increase your armor by 50% for like 3 rounds. But I mean, that's so general comparatively. Yeah. I mean, it's really powerful if you think about it. But
it's like if you're playing defense and you're like, now's the time to do my special move to defend harder.
Yeah.
It's like you would, I don't know. Like it's like
almost like kind of like a hip check in a, what do they call it? Array? Is it for a straight line?
To like a vector?
A vector. Maybe knock down up to like a vector 3. So, like, you hip check
for,
like, a crowd of enemies?
I may have an answer for this.
Okay.
What if it's immediate reaction, an ally is reduced to 0 hit points, you can move up to your speed without invoking attacks of opportunity and take the hit for them and immediately deal an attack to that character?
Yes.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yes.
So a character is getting hit and they're about to, and like this hit would knock them down.
Yes.
You're basically saying that didn't happen.
Yeah, you're saying I see that.
Right. And I leap in front of it.
I leap in front of it. I take that damage.
Like Kevin Costner in The Bodyguard.
Yeah.
Just like Kevin Costner this.
Like, this is the second Kevin Costner movie reference.
Second Bodyguard reference.
Yeah.
I like that.
It's a daily, sure.
Here's the thing. That would...
Maybe it does double weapon damage.
If you hit
and what was double weapon damage, because they are usually going to do one handed.
And if you save the target, like, so you hitting the enemy is not contingent on it saving the target.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that makes it good.
Yes.
And the rule about the speed was you move your speed without invoking an attack of opportunity. But what if the character's too far away?
Then you can't do it.
Then you just don't do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Just like, I mean, you wouldn't be able to do the champion one either.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, they got to be in. Healer. Like, if someone's outside of the movement square of the tank, you fucked up.
Yeah, healer, don't move 5 paces away from the tank.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to write this down.
Yeah, that's all right.
I think the thing that we should think about as we make these is,
what's the badass moment?
Well, yeah, what is the moment that is created by this thing? Because the champion doing a cool hit against something, getting essentially enraged, and then running through a bunch of dudes, and then one-shotting the big bad.
Right.
Having that moment, knowing that could happen, is really cool. Having the Citadel character, the tank, going like, take it, and then just deal a bunch of damage back, save a character. That's a moment where an entire scene can change.
Yeah.
Like, that's a diamond.
It's also in tone with Citadel.
Yeah. Yes.
If you land it, that can become a very memorable moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's good.
And that can endear a character to another character, or a player to another player.
Like what happens in The Bodyguard.
Oh, just.
So if you have like a spear, as long as you're adjacent to the ally,
mm-hmm.
No, you have to be adjacent to the enemy to intercept the damage, I think.
Okay.
Or you have to
be...
Do you need to be
adjacent to both?
Maybe you have to be within range of the enemy and you intercept the... No, you got to be adjacent to that ally.
Yeah.
You got
to
be adjacent.
I think you have to be adjacent to both.
I don't think so.
Now, well, do a ranged and you have a ranged, it should work too.
Define adjacent. Do you mean like literally in the square next or the hex next?
What if you push the ally one square?
So you take the spot?
You take that spot and take the damage.
Yeah.
That sounds even better. In the line of fire.
We're just gonna keep making.
Did you misspeak about Mr. Kevin Costner?
I just wanted to not. I just wanted to reference a bodyguard moment that's not Kevin Costner.
Yeah, I like that. They take your spot,
like Professor X in. Apocalypse.
So you could either endear yourself to that character, or you could push that character into a snake pit.
You absolutely could
if you're not careful.
How about this? You have to move your speed to get next to them, and then you switch spots. So they can be 7 squares away. You're moving 6 or 7 squares, but you get next to them, and then you switch.
What if instead of switching... This might be even better, because there's a risk associated with it.
All right.
What if you just knock that character over, and you stand in their spot?
I was going to say, because if you're like, oh, he's going to knock him down. I'm like, can you really see that? But if you run in... He's going to get knocked down anyway.
Yeah.
You knock them down and you have the shield up. It seems a little too much where I see a hammer is about to come down on my friend. I'm going to run across the battlefield and I'm going to get to where they are, throw the friend that way, then bring up the shield, then take the hit for them and then hit that guy.
Yeah.
That's like,
but if you think of it like you're running to home, you know, like home.
Right.
Yeah.
Like
right.
Where you're like, I'm just going, like I'm going to do it.
Yeah. It's more
and
of a...
If you knock them down or push them one square and then take the hit, that sounds more reasonable.
Yeah,
it's more
of a shoulder check.
But you're attacking while you're doing it, you know, so like, that makes sense.
Hit them with your shoulder as your weapon comes up. Or maybe...
Like you dive let's say, and swing. Yeah.
If your movement speed is 6 and you move 3 to get to them, could you push them 3 spaces back and use the rest of your movement speed?
No, I almost like either push them 1 square or knock them down and you're in their spot.
I like pushing them back 1 square and taking their spot.
Knockdown
could be really bad.
Yeah.
It could.
But so could pushing them. Like if you have to push them 1 square and you're on the edge of a cliff, you just like, oh, I guess
then
I ain't
you don't
do it.
Use it.
You just don't do it.
Yeah.
You can choose
You don't have to do it.
Mm-hmm. Why is that squishy
character on the
back? Or
you could push them the other way.
Yeah, I would push them behind me, and then they get phalanx.
I think it's the direction that you came from.
Yeah, because it wouldn't make sense that you're running this way, and then all of a sudden Josh and I switch spots. Well, we do a do-si-do, and then suddenly
there's
I'm
the
like,
situation
there.
That if you're behind them and you run up to them, you might push them into the enemy.
I think you have to push them into a square adjacent to you that
is unoccupied.
An unoccupied adjacent square. Say the closest unoccupied Jason square compared to the movement that you used.
All right.
We can figure out a way to say it. Actually, just push him,
I would say,
push him 1 square. Because you could run up and grab him and hook him. Shove him, whatever.
We don't want to limit it too much.
Yeah.
We want it to be cool.
Let's do that.
Positioning is cool.
Epic, yeah.
All right. The feature they have is armored dodge, where you add +1 to your dodge while wearing heavy armor and wielding a heavy shield.
I don't really... I think that's pretty weak, actually.
Yeah.
Now that we have separated armor and dodge.
Maybe say if you're wearing a heavy shield and...
But that's limiting to just a heavy shield.
Yeah, but I think that's... If you take a heavy armor and a heavy shield, you're really sacrificing something. Maybe you don't... Maybe just you no longer suffer the movement effects of wearing heavy armor.
Yeah.
Because that's plus two to...
If you're committing to the, you know...
Yeah. If you wear heavy armor and a heavy shield, you're losing two to your speed.
Mm-hmm. But I have heavy armor, light shield.
Yeah. And you're losing one to your speed.
I'm losing one to my speed. Well, then I feel like at level two, that's limiting, you know, maybe level three, level four, more specialized.
You want this deeper in on the path so that you can have more hybrid...
Yeah.
Two twos.
I think two should get more than just that person who has a heavy shield. It should offer to more people.
Well, maybe just if it's you don't suffer the movement penalty from wearing heavy armor.
Yeah,
then,
that's
then
better.
That person can wear a heavy shield.
Including...
With light armor, you know?
Yeah.
Or wear heavy armor and still move six.
But that's what I'm saying.
Have it and dual wield.
Yeah.
Give them this at spot two so they can make that decision.
Okay.
So not just saying, well, you don't have a heavy shield now, so you can't use it.
What if it's no movement impairing effects from... heavy armor, and plus one to your dodge when you equip heavy armor and a heavy shield.
Yes.
So both?
So it rewards heavy armor use, which makes sense to begin with, and then the more like a classic Citadel character that you are, the better the advantage. I like that.
And you get flame decals for your armor.
Yeah. Just a sweet paint job.
To describe how fast you got to run across the battlefield to get to an ally.
If you're wearing red shoes, you get to move plus
two. A little
two
fire engine movement. Red on there and just be run across that field. Yeah.
All right. So in the at will that they got, the utility action was into the fray. You choose an adjacent enemy and move up to your speed. And if you end that square, if you end that movement adjacent to the enemy, you do not provoke attacks of opportunity for doing it. That's okay. Hmm. I don't even really like it, to be honest with you.
Let's worry about utilities for step three.
Let's do that. Move into step three and we can change it later.
Yeah, that's for future us's.
Fuck you, future us. Command.
This one's going to be fun.
I got one called On My Mark. And
can we call it Pitter Patter?
Can we call it the Picard Maneuver?
Can we call it the Costner Gambit?
Right now, yes. It's just... You signal all allies to strike at once, and all allies that you can see and who can see you can make a basic attack against enemies that you can see. No enemy may be targeted more than once for this attack.
Yes.
I think that's great. I mean, some people would look at that and be like, why would I want to do that? There's not a lot of glory in that. And be like, dude, you could wipe out so much.
Can we call
in that
it
one move?
Hold. Hold.
I like that with the only caveat I would put on that, large characters to be able to hit by more than one character.
Yeah,
like if you got if
you're fighting a troll, that's like huge, you know.
Maybe your creatures your size or smaller can't.
Yes,
okay,
that works. Yeah, just so that you can gang up on large thing, and you're like everyone fucking hit that.
Mechanically, I really like it, but I wonder, does it make sense story wise if everyone's in the middle of a battle? Are you really just so story wise? Are you just shouting everyone hit that thing?
Yes. No. You don't pick one target to hit.
You just say, everybody just hit something. But yeah, aren't they already doing that?
The flavor is that you've been planning this with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, all right, you're the now's leader. The moment. Everybody do the thing that we planned.
Just
you
like,
know?
Take the shot. I'm like, take the shot when they could be doing anything else.
Yeah. If you get into like each character individually, like somebody playing Zealotry with a hammer is like, boom, 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 boom.
And like, somebody with... Shot. Like, what do you think I'm doing over here?
Yeah, that's all I've been doing, dude.
Yeah.
If I wasn't doing everything, it's like, no, but the idea is you're creating the opening. You're doing this.
That was the cue to do the thing we agreed on.
Yeah. Come on, this is a fastball maneuver, bro. Yeah. All right, and the other one is called Clear Instruction. The feature, and as an enemy is in clear view of you, the attacks you grant against creatures concealed to your allies gain an additional plus two to attack. I think that's boring and confusing.
Because you're not always, it's not always going to be hidden enemies.
It also doesn't, when you read it on the page, you can't understand how good or bad it is. And that's...
It's very situational.
Yeah.
So what is a feature you could give command?
Maybe something along the lines of like a defensive thing where story-wise you tell a player, oh, look out, he's got a hidden knife in his back belt or whatever. So that player now can take less damage or have like an extra thing of defense knowing something about.
What if it's something as simple as like you spot openings created by other players? So maybe it's like when an ally that you can see crits a target that you can see.
You say, oh, he's got a bad knee.
You see that as an opening and you can disengage one square.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple, but you could be like, this puts me in a better position. Maybe two squares.
Do you have to be in combat for that to happen?
How are you going to crit when you're not in combat?
When other characters crit?
Yeah.
So does the command character have to be in
engaged
in melee
no.
distance.
The idea is that when it happens, it's such an opening in the battlefield that you're like, ah, maybe like critical inspiration or something like that. Or
I'm just saying I'm seeing a situation in which there's a champion fighting a dude, command is fighting someone else, champion crits, they get to disengage from the target that wasn't hit.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I mean, maybe that's good, maybe it's not. Maybe it's that when somebody crits, you can pick somebody to disengage.
I like that better. Because then it when command does something for itself, it feels off flavor.
Yeah.
Okay.
So like, your champion crits on this guy, and you tell someone else, oh, he just critted. Go help him finish that guy off.
Or
is that, but they don't take the penalty for disengaging?
Someone just critted. It was such a moment, and it drew enough attention from allies and enemies alike that there's now a minor lull in combat, enough for something to get done. And command is the one who's looking at the battlefield spherically enough to make that happen.
Where you're like, oh, the tables have just turned that much more.
Yeah. So what if they crit, an ally of your choice can either disengage two spaces or stand up from being knocked down?
Ooh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Decay is up next.
Yes.
Step two. What we've got right now is Pangs of Death. And I like this one, and this may not even be the best thing to do, but I like the idea. So the idea is that any enemy currently undergoing ongoing effects specific to character powers, i.e. Zone of Decay, Challenge, Martyr, Pinning Shot, anything that is a power effect, you target those enemies that you can see. And it does 3d8 plus Composure. So the later you choose to use it, the better it is. But that's a lot of damage.
That's a lot of damage if your party understands that power and does those things.
Well, also, you have to keep track of everyone who's undergoing...
have to anyway.
Yeah.
And you've got... If you're core Decay, you have your own thing you got to track. You got to track Malediction anyway. I like that idea.
Because
it requires a clever player to really take advantage of it.
Yes. A lot of the magic classes, I think, should feel more... Erudite.
No objections?
No.
No.
Worth a try.
All right. I'm cool. Moving on to the feature, which is Enfeeble, which is if you use a malediction on an enemy already suffering from an ongoing effect, like malediction or something like that, you gain the upper hand against that enemy. Now, what does the upper hand grant ranged characters?
Good.
I mean, just can they make ranged opportunity attacks then?
Maybe they can. Maybe they can, because it's really hard to get upper hand against somebody as a ranged character.
As a ranged character, yeah.
Like, you definitely don't get it if they're knocked down, because it makes them harder to hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. So you could put Malediction on somebody, and you're like, I'm just putting him on again to get the upper hand.
Yeah.
So if he attacks somebody who's not me, I'm going to get a free attack against him.
Yeah.
But how long does it persist? How long do you have the upper hand?
One turn. You got to... So if
until the end of your next turn?
So if there's... That's a feature, right?
Yeah.
If it's a single opponent, that's super useful. But if it's not, you're cracking... That's something to crack the hardest character or someone who's in the fray. And I like that.
Or it just makes them like focus solely on you. Double malediction.
But yeah, it makes them look at you, though.
Is
that's
it only,
the problem.
Only if they attack an ally or if they move?
They can still
no,
shift.
It's only if they attack an ally. They can disengage.
Yeah.
When somebody doesn't disengage and they move, they get an attack of opportunity against them, and it's not because they had the upper hand. It's because they moved through a threatened square without disengaging.
I was thinking, what if it's just they can't attack another? They can't attack an ally.
Yeah, but I think the idea that you're forcing a bad guy to focus on you is dangerous.
Yeah.
As Decay.
Well, your range, too. It just kind of seems weird. It's hey, ugly! Like, what just, I don't know.
Casters
what if
are squishy.
You can grant the upper hand to an adjacent ally.
Yeah.
Oh.
I like that.
I like that, too.
An ally that's adjacent to the enemy? Okay.
Or maybe to one... Yeah, it has to be adjacent, right? Because maybe we'll remove the upper hand for range characters. It's not something you can get as a range character. You can get the high ground. Maybe we'll work on that later. It's over, Anakin.
I know malediction, but I just keep thinking, like, you turn that person into a swamp thing.
Well, just imagine a straight two-step malediction caster and a rogue, and how just like, oh, I cast it again, rogue. You're going to backstab him next turn.
I think that's great.
That's great. Yeah. I love anything that promotes interplay or
communication.
Yeah, party cohesion. I'm immediately for, because then you don't have to think of reasons why the party sticks together. Yeah.
It is kind of cool to be like, oh, I cast that on him, and hey, stealthy guy, remember, if you attack him now, you got him. You know,
that's
good.
Looks like by now, Kelton Esmond are best friends.
They're getting really tight.
All right, fire. Liam, I know you're very interested in hearing this.
I'm very interested.
The Daily. I love the name. It's called Rogue Star.
Go on.
And it's it hurts. A sphere of superheated plasma descends from above, obliterating everything it touches. And adjacent enemies take 5 continuous fire damage, and to sustain it, it takes a swift action.
Okay.
Does 3d10 plus composure.
Okay.
What's the area of effect on that?
1 within 10, but enemies adjacent take an ongoing 5, and you can spend a swift action to make sure they keep getting that.
I like that already.
Yes, please.
It's simple.
And also, it does the thing I wanted it to do, because the option was a good single target damage, which I don't really have.
Burning Lance is good. It's just not as good as the ice version. Oh, yeah.
But Fire Burst is so great. Or a really dope area attack one. That one can crack armor easily, and that's what I like.
Yeah, that 3d10 can. Yeah. The ongoing 5 can't.
No, but fire, that's not the point.
Yeah. Fire itself is an area effect. Like, you stand next to a fire, you're not immune just because you're not standing in the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, whereas like ice is area effect attack. Like if you do damage to somebody and there's an area component to it, it's a movement problem to everybody, but not a damage.
If you stand next to a block of ice, you're fine. If you stand next to a fire,
it hurts.
It's going on Jaws at Universal. Mm-hmm. That fire is like however many feet away from you, but you're still like, I feel singed. People would complain about being singed, but they weren't singed. It just was that hot.
Didn't feel it,
Now, the feature, it might be fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably fine. So it's called Pyroclasm. After you damage multiple enemies with fire on your turn, you get to add +2 damage to one enemy hit on your next turn, which +2 is fine, but I feel like you'd almost want to be like, add your composure damage because you can scale it.
Yeah.
Or you can, this is overpowered, you can deal an extra 1 fire damage for every enemy hit to one character on your next turn. But your fire boss does 6, it can hit up to 6 people.
Yeah.
And your next single attack does 6 extra damage. Maybe that's not that broken. You don't have anything that can hit like 20 people.
No, unless, but then we can't do that later. But if we also do that later, then it's, again,
later's fine.
That's self-scaling.
Yeah. Because
right now, the max when you get it is 6. And I have never hit 6 things.
Well, don't you have a blast one? Like, no. Okay, because that's 7. That's fine.
Well, actually, Burning Lance might have a blast one feature. I don't know.
No,
it damages
adjacent enemies. Maybe after.
Because right now, the only thing about that is right now, all that augments is 1 attack.
All right, what if it's something like you add a d6 of damage?
Done.
That's easy enough, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Told you, I like simple.
All right, well, that's easy. Ice. We're on to ice. Step 2. We all love ice. Nobody's playing it. So right now, the daily attack is called Snap Freeze. It does 3d6 plus composure in an adjacent cone 5. It's a big area. So maximum 18 plus composure. So it's not devastating.
Can you show me a cone 5 real quick just so I get a better idea?
Sure.
Yeah.
I can hit a lot of stuff. Yeah.
But it's not game breaking.
No.
Mm. Right.
No, that's 4. Sorry, this is 5.
That's pretty good.
But it's a daily.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
You just have one. Yeah. One awesome power.
Think about the moment that this brings up. You step forward at the beginning of a scene and just go, fuck you.
And then you're spent. You can't do it again.
That's it. Yeah, that's
but it's
it.
A good, it's a good opening move.
And it's an epic moment if you do it right.
And ice is very situational. Like, you have to play things kind of close to the vest with ice. Yeah. So what it is you do 3d6 plus composure, and affected creatures are immobilized and weakened until the end of your next turn. I think remove immobilized, they're slowed.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say.
Maybe that's...
Yeah.
Because 3d6, I don't really want to nerf the damage on it, because I feel like they need...
It's daily.
Yeah.
Their area damage is not that great.
No.
I like
so flavor-wise, what are we saying is happening with that? You're freezing the ground or something? Or
I think you're just blasting them with a cone of cold, basically.
Yeah. Okay. I'm seeing a Kamehameha.
Like Superman? Like blowing down the street?
Yeah, like Superman.
Yeah.
I like it because they're slowed, and then that goes with the...
Champion, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they're just slowed. We don't need to deal with weakened where they deal half damage or anything like that.
No.
Because
unless they're already weak to ice or something like that.
Yeah. Ice gets bonuses to people who are affected by its movement impairing attacks.
And you already got someone. Who was the one we just gave
Champion.
The bonus to? That just if they're slowed, you already got like shit Champion. On them. Yeah.
Plus their nose is going to get runny.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know if we need to put weakened on anything, because part of the fun of the game is how much damage enemies do to begin with. If you can make things weakened. That can make a lot of
characters.
That would
have to be like a high level.
When you combine that with armor, that gets ridiculous.
But we don't have anything that lasts longer right now than one turn.
All right.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. one round is the longest anything lasts. The, one of the game-breaking things about spells in Pathfinder 3.5 is that a lot of spells is like, oh, yeah, you'll do it for 1d6. Okay, six rounds, this guy can't do anything but laugh.
That's, you know, the, like, end of the combat.
Yeah, you win. You'll win in six rounds.
I've done so much terrible things with Tasha's Hideous Laughter.
So the feature for ice is cold-blooded, and enemies that strike you with a melee attack are slowed until the end of their next turn.
Great.
I like it.
It's immediately self-moving, and again, it adds to champion. That's great.
When somebody hits you as ice and you're core ice, you don't provoke attacks of opportunity from that character for moving.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody can hit you, and next round you're like, I'm just going to move my speed away from them because they're slowed.
And they can't catch.
Here's cold as ice, and you're looking to sacrifice.
Our love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. Next.
It has nothing to do with Kevin Costner, but I'll allow it.
I was saying, like,
we'll find a way.
Like Kevin Costner and Dragonfly?
Nobody saw that movie, Doug.
Yeah. I was just hoping that maybe a scene that somehow does that.
All right. So Marksman, Devastating Shot. It just does triple weapon damage plus intelligence, and you just take a careful aim at your enemy's most vital area. I don't know. It's fine. It's just boring.
It's really straightforward.
But yeah. I like it because then it's great when you get to do that. As much as it, you know, when you're just plinking away and you're not really doing, when you have something that can really do some damage, it feels real nice.
Should something need to trigger it? What would make this fun?
What if
well, doing the damage to me is fun, but if we need something else, that's fine. I just feel like doing damage is fun.
What if you don't move? You deal an extra weapon damage?
Like in that round?
Yeah, if you don't move that round, if you sacrifice, if you spend your movement action to just take careful aim before doing this ability, you get an extra weapon damage?
I like that.
Okay, so it goes up to four weapon. All right.
Yeah.
It just adds versatility. Where, like, if you have control enough of the battlefield, you get a bonus. I like that.
It's like when Wolf is in the noose and Kevin Costner has to really take aim to shoot the rope.
Look, Josh is giving.
Make it specifically that you have to spend your movement action on it so that command that turn could have moved you already.
I was going to throw out the idea of doing two arrows at once.
Oh. Or Christian Slater when he's tied to the barrel of gunpowder for some reason.
Split the arrow? I was going to say split the arrow where, like, after a successful critical hit, you just get to also do this and just fire another shot.
So we moved some. I think we've already agreed on what the feature is for Marksman. We moved it into step two because we didn't want them to have too many features.
Uh-huh.
And it's allies do not provide cover for enemies against your range attack anymore.
That's dope.
Yeah.
That's immediately amazing.
You have to be step two into Marksman to get it.
I want that so bad.
Sounds big for step two, though.
Nah.
It's just allies. Enemies can provide cover for each other, but you can shoot the gap through allies to hit them.
Mm-hmm. I like it.
Doug, it's great. And I want that.
No, I love the ability. Is step two too soon?
I don't think step two is too soon. That way, other ranged characters can grab it, and it doesn't have to be a giant investment.
And it's not that huge of a bonus. It really isn't. I mean, you take a negative for trying to shoot through allies. It's like a -4, but you can you can usually move.
Yeah.
But now you just don't have to.
And with hexes, it's easier to get a clear shot.
Yeah.
Is there still a penalty if you miss? Do you still hit your ally, or is it just that you don't miss? If you miss, you miss. You don't hit your ally.
You just miss.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, if you spend a lot of momentum,
and you still miss,
oh boy,
that would be great. Just
All right. Radiance is up next. The daily we've got right now I have called Heaven's Favor. It does 3d6, and it's an adjacent blast too. So on your space.
Mm-hmm.
What, no, adjacent blast was supposed to be burst. Oh, so a blast is from the center of a square. So the idea is it would be two from a center point. So from the center, it's a big area.
Uh-huh.
And spontaneous sunbeams break the gloom of combat, highlighting you and your allies. Yeah, you as well as allies within the zone gain your composure as health, and all of your heals until the end of the encounter grant additional health equal to your composure.
Ooh.
Enemies within the zone deal half damage until the end of your next turn.
That's a lot all at once.
I like it because they're dazzled. It's like the Dazzler.
One of the things that we've been doing with Radiance is making sure that they're solid enough for people to want to play them. I like this right now.
Okay.
It's only for half damage for a single turn, right?
Yeah.
It gives you a breather. It gives you a breather turn. It's not enough damage to do a whole lot unless they're really, really right up on you, and then you're kind of fucked. So that's a good moment, too.
And the only gain your composure is health.
Yeah.
So it doesn't heal your allies,
yeah.
Except for your composure score, which maximum is 4.
It's just like a...
Yeah, it's just a quick thing where they get composure,
yeah.
But it augments the rest of your heals, and the allies do less damage. for one round.
Allies do less damage?
No, I'm sorry. Enemies do less damage for one round.
That would be...
Yeah. Everybody calm down. Yeah.
All right, everybody. It'd still be pretty good.
I'm playing Peacemaker here. Like, yeah. Can't we all just think about this for a second, guys?
There's good people on both sides.
I like that. What's the feature?
Critical hits against enemies grant you shielding equal to twice your composure.
For how long?
Until it runs out.
Or you get new shielding, because it shouldn't be able to stack.
No, it doesn't. No, shielding never stacks.
Yeah.
So, like, maximum you could ever get is 8. If an enemy hits you for 10, you take 2 damage, and it's gone.
Yeah. And we have Martyrdom still a thing, right?
Yes, Martyrdom is still a thing.
That synergizes.
It'll chip away, yeah.
Yeah, that synergizes well with Martyrdom. I like that.
Okay. All right, Radiant Overflow. That's done.
We're cruising.
Scoundrel. Their attack I got right now is called Execution. Does 3 weapon plus strength. If an enemy is at half health or lower, it's increased to 4 weapon.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's good because it you don't have to sacrifice anything for it.
No.
Unlike, you don't have to sacrifice your move action for Marksman.
Dude, if that's with sneak attack and a crit, though, that thing is dead.
Unless you're using a dagger.
What
that's
is the...
Like 4d4 is not that great. But, man, if you could be Scoundrel and be using a battle axe. And you're like, execution. you could.
Yeah. I was going to ask, what's the current in-game signal for someone who is at half health now?
We just say half health.
Oh, you just say, you don't...
Yeah, because I think it's more descriptive than having its own term, and it really does mean half health.
Because literary Conan is Scoundrel, not Barbarian, right?
100%. Well, I think...
Yeah. Okay, he's both. He's cross-classed. Yeah. He's champion.
If we build him into this, he's definitely champion core.
Mm-hmm.
Multi-class into Scoundrel with some zealotry.
But I'm saying, like, you don't say, oh, he's bloodied, or he's staggered, or he's whatever. You just say, oh, he's at half health now.
Yeah, he's at half health.
We could think of a different one, but...
We could do a literary term at some point.
Half health isn't confusing.
No.
Bloodied is confusing.
Yeah. That's why I was asking, just because if there's, like, oh, wait, I thought he was... Oh, never mind, I don't want to do that daily anymore. Like, that
what
kind
if you
of,
say,
you know.
Oh, they're halvesies.
You just asked before, is this guy at half health?
Yeah, because the problem, too, is that the description says if the target is bloodied and the GM hasn't announced that they're bloodied, it's tough on the GM to be like, oh, every time somebody gets bloodied, they go, this guy is bloodied. But the players have a hard time even remembering to say, oh, I'm bloodied. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like this one, you're like, I'm going to use execution. Is he at half health? You're like, yeah, go for it.
Cool.
I love it.
Because you only need to know if he's at half health if you're going to, you know,
do a
thing anyway.
Yeah.
So.
And for the feature, I have fast target. I feel like this one's more fun than useful, but for every attack of opportunity you incur while moving, you add 1 to your speed for that move.
I don't know if you'd ever fucking use that, though.
But that almost sounds like you could potentially create a railgun, you know? Like
just like a pinball machine. Like there's the battlefield.
Or they just lined up in rows beside you, and you run between all these people, and you get to move 24 spaces in 6 seconds. Like,
I almost wanted to do the opposite, though.
It's kind of like,
where you're just like, shit.
Yeah.
You're
up.
You're doing Indiana Jones with the darts. Like, you're just like running.
It's like the opening of Dances with Wolves. You know, when he's on the horse and all the
God damn it. God damn it, Max. You fucker. Yeah, I don't know. That feature does the opposite.
I was
going
to say, it's in Waterworld where he's swimming under the water and they're shooting at him from the sides.
Which he would be fine, because I hear bullets lose their velocity as soon as they hit water.
Yeah, it's like they hit a wall, basically. Yeah. So, what don't you like about it flavor-wise? Because that sounds like that's the issue.
It's not flavor, it's what that would do for the character. Rogues are pretty squishy, and taking attacks of opportunity is very literally the last thing they want to do.
So wait, are you just saying it's high risk, low reward?
It's high risk, low reward to the point of I would be amazed if in an entire campaign you ever saw it used.
But if you did.
It would be really great, but I don't see it being used.
What is there, wait, so...
Rogues are very squishy.
Is there a way you can make it not as high of a risk? Like, if you're going to incur the attack of opportunity and you're going, like, that fast, if there's, like, a way someone, the Radiance, could bless you where it's just like, oh, you're somehow where it's not quite, you know.
I will say this. A rogue, the way that it's been played right now and the amount of staying power they have, the idea of taking an attack of opportunity, you wouldn't trade damage for damage straight up, let alone damage for move.
What if somebody misses you with an attack of opportunity, you get to disengage?
That's great.
Because that way you're not trading it. And with the changes we made to upper hand, there's a chance you're going to take some opportunity attacks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if somebody misses you, you want out immediately.
Yeah.
and Scoundrel should be a little slippery.
Yeah. You know? Could that be with Grapple, too?
I do want to make Scoundrel a little more survivable without adding armor or anything.
What if it's just whenever somebody misses you with a melee attack?
All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I feel like if somebody tries to grapple you and they miss, you could kind of bounce off of them. Like a greased weasel.
Or a greased Scotsman.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's nary an animal alive that cannot run a greased Scotsman.
Grease me up, woman.
All right.
He was a Spaniard, I believe.
Groundskeeper Willie?
Egyptian Spaniard, I believe.
So we got zealotry. So you need a lot of zeal. We have one called... Right now I have something called Condemnation. And it's an attack with melee or ranged. And it does one weapon damage plus your damage stat. You call down judgment on an enemy sealing their fate. And until the end of the scene, all targeted attacks against that affected creature deal 1d6 additional radiation damage.
I like it.
Now, that's not just you. That's
everybody.
Everybody who does a targeted attack, which means no area attacks, which should facilitate that, like, this is the last guy you're facing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, or the one big guy.
Yeah.
Or, let's do this early on so that we can always just keep chipping away.
Yeah, just we're trying to focus somebody down, and I'm going to judge them.
And a d6 is the highest amount of armor someone can have, so that's a good, good base.
But it's just extra damage on every attack that's targeted against them.
I like it.
So, like, even the ray attacks won't work on it.
Or the vectors? Yeah.
Yeah, vector attacks won't work. And the feature is called Sparks from the Anvil. And critical hits against enemies heal allies within 10 spaces for double your composure.
I love that.
Okay.
I would just imagine being Zealotry with a dagger.
Yeah, or any piercing weapon. You can have a spear.
Yeah,
you know?
That'd be cool.
But your composure is only, you know... You're not going to have four composures Zealotry. It's not.
And the fact that it's procced randomly... Well, not randomly, but it...
It's
not,
random.
Not at will. It makes it fun. It makes it fun. Because it's good.
We introduced a few critical hit features in step two.
And I like that.
I like them. You guys all cool with that?
I like them.
That's all of them, guys.
All right. That was easier than I thought it was going
to
be.
Yeah. Because a lot of it's already done. We don't have to brainstorm. Like, we had ideas for them that we went over... You know, separately while we were talking about it through other episodes. Step three is going to be a little more of a bear because we have to find like extra little exceptions that people have.
Yeah.
But I'm into it.
I think by step three, you're starting to focus. You're not just reaching in to get something.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah
maybe. Because I
think limiting the number of per scene and dailies you can use per scene and daily is actually going to promote more multiclassing.
Yeah.
So you have like a different, you have a wider deck of cards.
You have a bag of tricks.
Yeah.
Because I know what's going to happen is if you go straight path, some of your encounter per scene or daily abilities will just straight up replace the other ones. But I like that too.
Yeah, it's easier to scale.
The thing that you do but harder is a great way to scale things. Or someone could be a jack of all trades and be like, what do we need to get done? I can do it serviceably.
Okay, well, I feel good about it. You guys all feel good about it?
Mm-hmm. I feel great. Yeah.
Okay, so I feel like we covered a lot here today. We did changes to the upper hand, which I feel very good about.
Yes.
Now, the thing is... Opportunity attacks are limited. You only do one per round unless you're Citadel.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's not that broken.
No.
All right. But it is threatening. It does. It makes you think. So we change the upper hand to you have the upper hand against an enemy and he does an attack that doesn't include you. You get to make an opportunity attack against them. Limiting the number of per scene and daily abilities that you can use per scene and per day. We talked about rewarding the idea of rewarding GMs or just incentivizing people
just
to not
up
be
the
shit.
Question.
Yeah. To make it feel like you're collaborative and...
You're a part of the game, not just, you know.
And the idea that it's important that your players appreciate what you're doing. And we ran down step two. We got a bunch of stuff. Now we're ready, which is a big deal because in our playtest, I think everybody's ready for it, right? I mean, who doesn't have more than 50 momentum right now?
I think we all do, yeah.
Katie might not.
Yeah, she might not. But that's the thing.
She came in later.
50 momentum, you can take one step and still have 20 momentum left over, which is a pretty good buffer.
Yeah.
Question is, do I go step three fire? Do I get my burning
you mean step
star?
Two?
Step two in fire, or do I get something fun? Like go ice at a just full left field.
As if step two in fire isn't fun?
Yeah, it sounds fun. It's all pretty fun.
Yeah.
And you can go marksman.
If you had your ice, you shoot your fire at it and you just create a wall of steam. Hide yourself.
That sounds fun.
For like 2 seconds.
Yes. Yeah. All right, guys, thank you so much. We really appreciate you guys listening to the podcast. If you enjoy what we're doing here and you want to play at home with your friends, on Patreon, we are releasing all the PDFs of everything we're creating. Everything we talk about on here, we try to condense and make a rule book. And at the $5 tier on Patreon, we're releasing those PDFs as we complete each section. So we've already released up to step one of the paths, and up next is going to be the races. And it's taking quite a lot of writing, so our plan is to focus right now on anything that will help you create a character as fast as possible, because the rule book, as we understand it, is constantly changing, so nailing down the rules will be one of the last things we do. But if you listen, you know what we're doing, and you know how to play the game. Mm-hmm. So if you want to reach out to us, though, you can always comment on any Patreon post we make, even if you're not a patron.
If you have a favorite Kevin Costner movie, let us know what it is.
Yeah, at the $10 tier, if you want me to try to pretend to be Kevin Costner.
Ooh, which one? There's so many good ones to pick.
Yeah, and they all sound the same. Also, we're on Facebook.com/RPGFS.
And find us on Twitter at Homebrew Hombres. That's Homebrew Hombres, not Homebrew Hombre.
And we're on Instagram at RPG From Scratch, all one word.
If you want a bare-bones version of the rule set, check out our wiki at rpgfs.wikia.com.
And until next time, guys, stay safe, stand watch, and get a full rest.
Kisses.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.